greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Do You Speak Credit when we come back. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transaction. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the Internal Revenue Service, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package, and let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and request your free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Do You Speak Credit? And what we mean by Do You Speak Credit? Do you understand the terms and conditions of the credit, that is, the consumer credit contracts that you're signing? Oftentimes, people will call here and they will complain about justice in America. They'll complain about the judge who ruled against them in this or that action, not understanding that the judge is simply enforcing the terms and conditions of an agreement that you made. And nobody forced you to make the agreement. That is certainly true. They enticed you. They tempted you. They cunningly coerced you, but nobody forced you. And you don't have a legal grounds or any legal grounds for refusing to pay simply because the other side induced you into a contract that's one-sided, that doesn't work in your favor, that is unfair, unreasonable, unethical. It's legal. I told you last time about these title loan contracts, 118% interest. It's legal because the legislature enacted the legislation. The governor signed it into law. There are hundreds of these loan title companies here, or car title companies in Missouri, charging 9.9%, not a year. 9.9% per month. That's 118% a year. I showed you the numbers. Now, there's another neat way to screw you out of your money. It's called the late fee clause. And somewhere in the contract, there's going to be a late fee clause. And the companies, when they put that clause in the contract, they're not doing that to do you a favor. It's not to encourage you to pay on time. It's to make 60% interest off of you on the late fees. These late fees are worth a lot of money. Now, it may only be a $5 late fee, but when you compute the interest that is attached to that late fee and you extrapolate that into an annual interest rate, it becomes pretty significant. Let me show you. The late fee clause is worded like this. It says, in the event that the debtor defaults for 15 days in making any of the aforementioned payments when the same become payable hereunder, creditor may charge the debtor a delinquency or collection charge of 5% of the amount of payments in default, or the sum of $5, whichever is less. Now, oftentimes these late fee clauses can escalate. For instance, I was in a store the other day, and it said, we charge $20 for returned checks. $20 for a returned check. So if you wrote a check for $5 to buy a pack of cigarettes, I guess it's a pack now, isn't it? I can remember when cigarettes were $1.89 a carton. Let's see, if you wrote a check for $35 and bought a carton of cigarettes, and let's suppose for the sake of our discussion that your check bounces. So you come back into the 7-Eleven store, and they say, hey, Bob, your check here bounced. It's $35, and we have to put it in for collection. So you have to redeem the check for $35, and you have to pay us $20 on top of that. So it's $55. And if you don't, we'll turn it over to the prosecuting attorney, who in turn will prosecute you for writing a bad check and then put you in prison for 5 years. And so you pay the $20. Well, let me show you what that $20 amounts to. Because that $20, along with a lot of other people's $20 that they have to pay, and I can remember working at Circle K many, many years ago now, but we used to charge $5 for a bad check. It was the cost, you know, the hassle of putting the check through a second time and then giving the check back to you. And then, of course, sometimes those checks never pan out and the check is bad. But that $20 collection fee on that check over there amounts to a pretty substantial interest rate when you compute it into the amount of interest that you're paying. So that $35 check, let's just try it, take 20 and divide that by 35, and you'll find that that's 57%. 57% on a $35 check. But that's 57% on one transaction, and there's 12 months in a year, so there's 12 transaction periods in a year. So we'll just multiply that times 12, and the annual interest rate is 685%. So we're charging you 685% interest when we charge you $20. The IRS charges you 60% interest of the unpaid balance on your taxes. Did you know that? 60% interest. Now, I don't know where usury begins and ends, at least insofar as the civil law is concerned, because when I was a kid, they used to say if you charge more than 6% interest, it's usury. Gosh, the banks charge 15 to 28% interest. Finance companies charge 35% interest. Loan title companies or car loan title companies charge 118% interest. And here's the check charge. Now, they don't call it interest. They call it a charge. Okay, but when we compute this as businessmen, we say, well, how much money are we making off of our investment? All right, now let's take this carton of cigarettes. The carton of cigarettes is being Keystone. So, when I charge you $30 for a carton of cigarettes, I bought those cigarettes for $15. So I took $15 out of my pocket, and I bought a carton of cigarettes, and I put them on my shelf, and you came in and wrote me a check and bought that carton of cigarettes and walked out. All right. If the check bounces and I never get paid, I lose $15, and that happens every now and again. And that's why we keystone our merchandise, because we know that there's going to be some losses. We have cost of goods sold. Cost of goods sold. So as a businessman, I know that it's going to cost me some money to sell that carton of cigarettes. I've got advertising, I've got store rent, I've got labor and taxes and lights and all this kind of thing. So I've got some costs that are involved. So I keystone my product and I charge $30. You write me a check for $30 or $35. Let's call it $35. And you walked out of my store with my $15 that I have invested. You've got my $15 investment. So I turn around and I say, wait a minute, your check bounced. So you got to pay me $20. And that's why I post that in my store. See, the law requires that I tell you what the interest rate is or what the costs or charges are for the products and services that I'm giving you. So the service charge on an insufficient funds check is $20. All right, so you come back in and you say, well, gosh, I made a mistake. I didn't balance my checkbook correctly, and it's my fault, and so here's the $20. So the $35 check is made good, isn't it? In addition to the $35, I got $20 left over, which is 685% interest on the $30. But what is it on my $15? I mean, come on, guys. So let's take the $20, and let's divide that by $15, and that's 133% right there. That's 133% times 12. That's 1599%. That's 16 times. So by charging that $20, now I'm not going to make 1600% interest every time I do business. But when I do one check with you, on this one it's 16 times, and the next guy maybe it's only 3 times, and the next time maybe it's 10 times, and so on. At the end of the year, when I take a look at how many bad checks came in the door, how many $20 bills did I collect, how much investment did I have out on at risk, and how much did I actually collect, I'm making several hundred percent, several times the amount of my investment. Now let me tell you what good business is. If I have $100 and I go out and I invest that $100, and at the end of the year I make 5% interest on that investment, that's called good investing. If you're making 5% on your investment, that's called good. If you're making 10%, it's exceptional. That's called double-digit return. If you're making 15-20%, like this housing return, now people are making 15-20% a year. I mean, that's phenomenal investing. That's just, you know, it's unreasonable. Can you imagine what that turns out to be when you're a merchant and you've got $15 invested in a carton of cigarettes, you sell it for $30 or $35, and then the check bounces and you get to score an extra 20. Not only do you make your $15 profit, but you also make $20 off of the $15 that you had at risk. And you're doing this every time you get a bad check. Now, you're not making the same percentage on every check, because you could have a $150 check and you get $20, or you can have a $30 check and you get $20, or you can have a $10 check and you charge $20. You're always charging $20 for a bad check, no matter what the size of it. My God, when you start adding that up, boys and girls, that amounts to hundreds of percent interest. You're investing $100 and you're making $200 or $300 or $400 off of that $100. Now that is an obscene return. Even I blush a little bit when there is an obscene return like that. Not that it's illegal or immoral or unethical, but you people don't understand what we're doing to you as businessmen. And we're screwing you, we're bluing you, and we're tattooing you, and you don't even know it. People pay those $20 and they don't think anything about it. Now let's try this on for size. I've never paid one of those bad check charges because I don't write bad checks. I don't write checks at all. When I walk into the store and I buy something, I pay cash for it. And oftentimes I make the merchant give me a discount. Let me give you an illustration as to how that works. When you walk into a store and it says, we take MasterCard and Visa, we want your credit card. Did you know that if you charge that on your credit card, let's walk in and let's buy a pair of shoes. Let's just walk into a shoe store and buy a pair of shoes. And I did this the other day. It was down at the Pro Bass Shop, or Bass Pro Shop, I guess it is. And the shoes were $60. It was a hell of a buy on the shoes. They were foreign made, of course. They all are, but $60 for a pair of high top shoes, and that's, you know, if you bought a pair of Red Wings, it'd be $130. It'd be double that. So these shoes are $60. Now, you walk up to the counter, and you can give the guy three $20 bills, or you can give him your credit card. If you give this guy your credit card, he runs it through, and it costs you $60. But do you know what the merchant has to pay to make that transaction? 5%. 5% of that $60. That's the merchant's charge for making that credit card sale. Now, the merchant's not stupid. Merchants aren't stupid. People are not in business because they're dummies. Now, maybe you truck drivers and plumbers think that all those Walmart stores are filled with a bunch of dummies out there, but let me assure you that those people can all add and subtract. Maybe the clerk can't, but all of the people in management can add and subtract, and they can do percentages, and they do it pretty well. And they know that when they take credit cards, that it costs them 5% on every credit card transaction. To make that sale, the bank has to get paid $3 for that $60 pair of shoes. So, they bought that pair of shoes for $27. And they want to keystone the markup. So they have to put the $3 that it's going to cost to do the credit card transaction. So they round it off to 30 and double it to 60. So they put the shoes on sale for $59.95. So just so that you know how much that store has involved in that shoe, they wrote a check. They paid cash, $27, and that included the freight to get it delivered to their store. The shoes were probably $23 or $4, and the freight to get them there was $3 or $4, and they're in at $27, and they've got to add that credit card transaction fee on there, and so they add $3 on the retail end onto the wholesale cost, round it off to $30, and sell you the shoes for $59.95, and they've got a keystone markup in it. You know what I do? I tell them, do you want me to pay you with a credit card, or do you want me to pay you with cash? And I tell them, I want you to give me the $3 or the 5% discount on that. Now, oftentimes when you're a senior citizen, they'll give you a 10% discount because you're a senior citizen. And all of you oldsters out there, you think, well, they know that we're on a fixed income and they feel sorry for us. And so they want to do us a favor over here. No, that has nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with it. Business is business, and BS is BS. The reason that we prefer old people, when a guy that's 60 years old writes a check, it ain't going to bounce. When old people come in and they charge something, they're going to come in and pay. It's the young people. They're the guys you got to watch out for. They're the deadbeats. Those are the guys that are flaky. So the oldsters that come in over here, and when they buy, they pay, and you're not going to have a loss. You give those guys a discount to encourage their trade. You want them to keep coming back to your store. So you say, hey, you're an old guy. We're going to give you this discount over here. It makes you feel real good. They give you 10%. I know I do it. And I say, well, I'm going to come back here again. This guy gives me 10%, but I also nick him for that 5%, because I tell the guy, I'm not going to pay you with a credit card because that's going to cost you another 5%. So you give me 15% discount now. Give me another 5% because I'm going to pay you with cash. And then you can do one more little thing over here. You can say to the guy, I don't need a receipt. Especially if it's a little dealer, some little guy, you know, like in an antique store. And you say to the guy, I don't need a receipt. And you give him the $55 cash. See how that is? So if you want 15% off of your $60, you just do it this way. Take 60 times 0.15, and you want a $9 discount. So you just hand him the $51 and say, I don't need a receipt. And you know what that businessman will do with that? He'll take that $51 and put it in his pocket, and he won't write anything up and have an inventory shrinkage. And the $27 that he invested in those shoes to start with, it got swiped, it got stolen, it disappeared from his inventory. And now he's got to sell three pairs of shoes to make up that $27 over there before he starts showing a profit again. The second pair of shoes that he sells, the next two pairs of shoes just breaks even. And he walks out of there with $51 tax-free in his pocket. Now, don't you feel sorry for the government, because, see, the government knows what that little merchant over there is doing. Don't you ever think for a minute now that the government agents, the IRS agents and the state sales tax people, that they don't know what those merchants are doing. They know exactly what those merchants are doing. And it just really makes them mad as hell. And that's why they're so hard on you merchants out there, because they know how you're screwing, blueing, and tattooing them. So do the insurance companies. The insurance companies know that when you turn in a claim, that you've inflated that claim by 10, 15, 20%. But then don't you feel sorry for the insurance company, because the insurance company has inflated their premiums by 35, 40, or 50%. So the insurance company is screwing you, and you think you're screwing the insurance company, and the merchant thinks that he's screwing the government, and the government comes along and screws the merchant, and everybody is screwing everybody. Everybody's lying, stealing, and cheating from everybody else. We're a nation of liars, thieves, and cheats. And we're made that way because of paper money. We're made that way because of vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. And ultimately, it ends to the dissolution of the nation. It ends to the collapse of the economy and national captivity and a foreign invading army coming in and imposing a new political environment upon you. That's what happened to Germany in 1945 and Japan. It happens to countries all around the world from that point until this, and it'll happen to us at some point in time. So you might as well understand how the game is being played. And then down here at the bottom of all of this, the net cause of it is our own foolishness. We, boys and girls, are the proximate cause of our own injury. We go out here and we make these silly contracts and we make these promises to pay. We go to work for companies that pay us with worthless Federal Reserve notes. Our government inflates our money supply, and they steal 3, 5, 7, now they're stealing 12% a year from us. They screw the old people out of their Social Security payments by this cost of living index. They give them 3% in an environment where inflation runs 6 to 12. So they're just dinging everybody all the time. Everybody is dinging everybody all the time. So you might as well understand who it is that's dinging you. So now, in the event that the debtor defaults, what that means on late fees, what that means in plain language is that you can charge me a late fee if I'm 15 days late, and if I don't pay on time just once, my state law may let you charge me a late fee on every other late payment that I make also. So they open the door with a late fee. And here's what happens with your bank credit card. They send you a credit card and they say, hey, listen, there's no interest on this credit card for 6 months. Do you know what they're doing to you? They're appealing to your lust and greed. And you're going to take the credit card and go out and use it and pay no interest for 6 months. Now, the terms and conditions of the contract, you see, to get that credit card with no interest, you had to sign that contract. So you sign that contract, and it has all these neat little clauses in it. Now, who's screwing who? You think you're going to screw the bank? Those people are professional screwers. You're just an amateur. I mean, hell, it's like going into Flo's whorehouse, and you think that you're going to stick it to one of those girls? That's what those girls are in business for, boys. You're not going to teach that girl anything. You're not going to teach that bank anything. You're not going to teach that merchant anything. He already knows what he's doing and how to do it. You're not going to teach that insurance agent or that insurance company anything. So this late charge over here, in reality, a late charge is simply a way to increase the rate of return, because we know there's going to be a certain number, a certain percentage of people who are going to pay late. So having watched that, we say, good, let's put a clause in the contract that says if you pay late, we get to ding you $5. So your payment, let's say, is $150 a month. Okay, so you come in and you pay late. Well, let's take $5 and let's divide that by 150. And we find that that's 3% interest. So you say, well, I had to pay him $5, but, well, you know, it's nothing. It's only 3. Okay, now times 12 is what? 39%. Well, the banks only charge 28% top end over here for interest. Now, only 28%. Only 28%. I mean, if you're investing and you're a mutual fund portfolio manager and you're investing your investors' money and you're making 5, 6, 8, 9% return per year, you're called a genius. And here's this merchant over here. He's selling you this big screen TV, $150 a month payments. You come in 15 days late, he dings you for $5. That's 39% interest. Chump. 39%. Now, you're sitting there saying, yeah, but I'm only late once or twice a year. Okay. But this guy sells thousands of these contracts per year. So, that's right. And every one of those customers will be late on average once or twice a year. Well, let's just try that. We take 1,000 contracts times 2, that's 2,000 late payments, times 5 is $10,000. So we're making $10,000 a year off of these 1,000 customers over here. And what is our exposure? We haven't got a nickel's worth of exposure. All that's happened here is that you've borrowed the $150 for 15 days. And if I take $150 for 15 days, now I gave you the interest rate there on 30 days. On 15 days, it's double that. But you see, they charge you the late payment, whether you're late 15 days or 16 days or 18, 20, 25, 30 or whatever it happens to be. Whatever the late fee is, they charge you that particular amount. Now, when you compute that into a percentage of your cost of goods sold, when we're operating a business like an insurance company, let me show you here as an insurance adjuster, my job working for the insurance company was to string you out. We owe you $10,000 on your claim. No doubt about it, and we're going to pay you the $10,000. But are we going to pay you the $10,000 today, or are we going to pay it to you tomorrow? And if I could stall you off from today until tomorrow, could I stall you off from today until next Monday? If I could stall you and not pay you the $10,000 that I owe you until next Monday, could I do it for 30 days instead of 1 week? If I owe you $10,000 and I don't pay you for 30 days, but I pay you 60 days from now, I've got the use of your $10,000 for 60 days. Now, what we do is we divide that by 360. We don't use 365, we use 360 days in an interest calendar year. And in some cases, we charge people daily interest. We can charge you daily interest, weekly interest, monthly interest, semi-annual interest, quarterly interest, or annual interest. So interest is always calculated as annual interest. 6% simple interest is you borrow $100, and then I'm gonna charge you 6% simple interest. At the end of the year, you come in with $106. I make $6 profit for lending you my money for 1 year. And that's typically good business. We call it good business. I wouldn't get out of bed for 6%, and I don't know of any other merchant that would either, but, you know, they call that good. Now, let's figure out a way where we can make a little bit more money. If I charge you 6% interest, and I charge you 6% daily interest. What I'm really doing is charging you the 6% interest compounded daily. So I charge you the interest. I compound it 1/360th. I take the 1/360th, and then I charge that to you, and I say, well, now you've got that money too. You haven't paid me for it yet. So you got to pay that and pay that. At the end of the year, it adds up to more than 6%. It'll be 7 or 8% or 9%. Can you follow that? So I'm advertising one thing, but I'm really doing and delivering something else. We call that bait and switch. So we advertise one thing, like Walmart. They'll say, well, you come in here, and here's the price. It's $1.398. And then you go to check out. Well, when you check out, they don't charge you $1.398. They charge you $1.498. They ding you for an extra dollar. And my wife and I, we've been watching that for a long time. And if you catch them doing that, you say, no, that item's on sale over there. And so they say, oh, yeah, it's on sale. Gosh, we're awful sorry. It's the computer. It's the computer that does that. Now, you just test this out. You go in here and you buy 5 sale items. And you take those 5 sale items through, and they'll charge you the regular price, not the sale price, because the computer hasn't been changed. That's what they allege. They don't want to say, listen, what we're doing here is false advertising, and we're dinging you for an extra dollar, but most of you people can't add and subtract and can't calculate and can't catch us. And if there is a guy that does catch us once in a while, we say, gosh, it's the computer. My wife did this for 3 consecutive days on the same item, and they hadn't changed the computer for 3 days. Now, what does that tell you? It's a methodology in sales whereby we increase the percentage that we make. We're advertising $3.29, but when we sell it, we're selling it for $4.29. See, that's actually in the neighborhood of 25% more. And we can do that to about 85 or 90% of our customers, about 10 or 15% of our customers actually catch us, and then we lower that price by $1, give it to them at the sale price, but we're encouraging 100 people to buy, and only 15 of them get the sale price, 75% or 80% of them are paying the extra dollar. That's an extra 25%. That's a 25% markup, boys and girls. It's an extra 25% markup. All right, so there's your late fee charge. I got to give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, our schedule, and our archive. And it can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs, by the way, are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, economics, education, history, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, we offer a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Remember, that CD package is free of charge. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give out do not necessarily mean that the authors or the publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And their viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed in whole or in part by the editorial review. Put another way, sometimes I get a letter in here and they'll say, do you know that those guys are Masons? Do you know that those guys over there are a bunch of liberal, commie, faggo, faggot, you know? And I say, listen, that may be true. But what they said was, and what I agreed with, is what I put out over the air. And I don't review or investigate people's politics, religion, or their sexual orientation before I give a recommendation. I don't know what that author is over there. I don't really care. But if he writes a book, and it's a pretty good one, and I give you some information, like this book here, we're taking a look at these clauses, these do you speak credit clauses. I may not agree with this guy in total, but I agree with him on this particular part of the information. Now keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this radio station, but they should. Now, if you want more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to my webpage. It's georgegordon.org or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967 for that free general law CD package. Okay, we're kind of spilling the beans here on insurance companies, merchants, and other consumer sales institutions. Could be Sears Roebuck, it could be Bank of America or Visa or MasterCard. And after all, these people aren't breaking any laws now. Well, I shouldn't say that. They're breaking the laws of God. But he doesn't count. I mean, nobody sits over here and says, oh my God, we're violating the law of Moses. This violates Exodus 23. This violates the Ten Commandments. Nobody's concerned about that. We're just concerned about, does it violate the Securities and Exchange Commission regulations? Does this violate the statutes of Missouri, and is the Missouri Attorney General going to come down on me because of my business practices? That's what we're concerned about. And these business practices that I'm describing here are 100% legit. I mean, they're practiced by Visa and MasterCard and Best Buy and Target and Walmart, all the chain stores. I mean, they're all out here practicing this because it's the law. They went to the legislature through their lobbyists and they said, we want these changes in the law, which is, by the way, exactly what's coming down on you on the 17th of October. The banking industry, the credit card industry went to the Congress and said, here's what we want. And Congress said, okay, we'll give it to you. Just make sure that you make your check out to my campaign re-election committee for the 2006 election. And you can rest assured that Visa and MasterCard and Walmart and all these consumer credit companies are going to send in their campaign contributions to those senators and representatives who voted for these changes in the Bankruptcy Act. Now, I don't advocate bankruptcy. I think the people, when they make contracts, ought to fulfill the terms and conditions of their contracts and pay their debts. But there comes a time when you can't pay the debt. I mean, you just physically, financially can't do it. Now, let me tell you a story about a student of mine. He was a truck driver. He used to drive truck for Navajo Truck Company. And at that time, I mean, this is 15, 20 years ago now. At that time, this guy was getting paid $20 an hour. He's a Teamster driver driving from Navajo. It was more than $20. Hell, I think it was $27 an hour. 26. I think he's getting paid $26 an hour. Now, he didn't pay his taxes for a number of years, and the IRS got after him, and one day they sent him a bill for $330,000. $330,000. Now, where did they get the $330,000 number? Well, this guy didn't file tax returns, and he was a tax protester, and he gave him the finger, and he gave him a lot of static. And so they just reached up into the sky, right up over the top of his head, and grabbed a number, and it happened to be $330,000. They said, all right, your deficiency is $330,000. Now that you owe us $330,000, Mr. Truck Driver, take that $330,000 and give a 60% penalty. So take $330,000 times 0.60 and pay us $198,000 in penalties. So you got 330 plus 198. So let's put that into my little Texas Instrument calculator here. 330 plus 198. $528,000. Then you haven't paid us this $528,000 for the last 6 years. And you owe us 10% interest. Now, what's the interest on $528,000? $52,800 a year. All right. Now, write that down in your notes. You got $528,000. At 10% interest, you owe $52,800. Now, they added that on there, too, but I'll just forget that for the minute. Now, remember this guy makes $26 an hour? He works 8 hours a day for $26. And let's give him times 2,000 because that's how many hours there are in a year. This guy makes $52,000 a year. You follow that? But out of the $52,000 a year, he has to pay his income tax and his Social Security tax, doesn't he? The Social Security tax is 16% and the income tax is 17%. And then there's a bunch of other discounts and so on. So let's just take 25% to be reasonable. All right, so let's take 52,000 times 0.25. So we're going to take $13,000 out of this guy's $52,000, aren't we? Okay. So now, if you take $13,000 off of that, doesn't that leave him with about $39,000? Okay, so he's got $39,000, and he's got a wife and a couple of kids. And he's got a $528,000 bill, which he has to pay interest on at 10% a year, which is $52,800, but he only makes $39,000 a year. Can you follow this? This guy could never pay that debt off in 100 billion years. In fact, every year he's going to owe more money. In fact, he's going to owe $528,000 plus $52,800. And if he paid the $39,000, he would have a deficiency there of $13,000. So next year he's going to owe $528,000 plus $541,000. And it's going to keep growing and growing and growing forever and ever and ever. And he's never going to be able to pay the debt off. Well, he happened to be here in the classroom, and I said, okay, well, this is an easy solution. You go out and start cutting grass at $3 an hour. That's what minimum wage was then, about $3.25 an hour in those days. I said, just go out and start cutting grass at $3.25, and you'll be money ahead. And he says, oh, no, I couldn't do that. I'd have to quit my job at Navajo. I wasn't sure if the guy was mentally deficient or not, and I kind of looked at him like, you know, I'm waiting for the punchline. It's a good joke coming up here. What's the punchline? And I said, what's the story here with Navajo? He said, where else can I get a job that pays $26 an hour? Where can I get a job that pays $26 an hour? I'm a truck driver. I make $26 an hour. Yeah, partner, but the jig is up. The IRS has nailed you, and they got $528,000 worth of bill against you. I mean, they took $330,000. They nicked you for 60% penalty, and now they're nicking you for 10% interest on this $528,000 that you owe them, and 10% of $528,000 is $52,000. By the time you pay your income tax every year, which they're going to deduct now because they're not going to trust you to pay your taxes, you're only going to net $39,000. And even if you don't support your family and don't spend a dime on rent and food, clothing, and shelter, and you put the whole $39,000 against the $52,800 that you got to come up with every year just to break even, you're losing $13,000 a year on this $26 an hour job. You know, he left school here, and he never understood that. I don't know if you out there in radio land can understand that either. But this is a case where this guy, and especially under this new bankruptcy program here, used to be in the old days, you could bankrupt out of your taxes after you gave them 270 days notice, but I'm not sure that that's going to be the case in the future. So I just wanted to tell you that the world's going to change here next Monday. And insofar as the average Joe Sixpack is concerned, the world is never going to be any different because he never knew that there was a problem to start with. The guy making $26 an hour as a Teamster truck driver can't do the arithmetic. The poor bastard's been to public school. He'll probably never understand what the problem is here. But he can't ever pay that debt off. And that's where you're at here when you're trying to do business with these lawyers that are writing up consumer credit contract clauses over here. You're never going to get ahead of these guys. The best thing you can do is don't do business there. I know I was out in Reno. I like to gamble a little bit, you know. I like to go over on the crap table. And my old daddy used to tell me, he said, you know, if you want to gamble, that's fine. But you need to set a limit. You know, here's $500 and I'm going to go blow $500 over on a crap table tonight. Don't figure on making money. If you win one time, that's fine. But he said, you can plan on losing that plus the $500. He said, don't plan on making any money at it. And so far, I haven't planned on making any money at it. And so the amount of money that I've lost has been entertainment. You can't beat the house because the arithmetic is working against you. And it is true, you can win tonight, but tomorrow night you're going to lose, and you'll lose more tomorrow night than you won tonight. And so in the end, there's a certain percentage that the house takes on every bet that's put on the table. The same thing happens when you buy stocks. When you're buying stocks, there's a brokerage commission. The broker never loses, but every stock buyer does. Now, that's the way that game is played. So whether you want to gamble in the stock market or you want to gamble in the bond market or you want to gamble on the crap table, the truth of the matter is the odds on the crap table are better than the odds in the bond and the stock market. You're going to lose in all three, but you'll lose less on the crap table than you will in the stock and bond market. And if you're going in here and you're going to buy something, you'll do a whole lot better if you go in and buy it and pay cash. Take your 5% discount because you're paying cash instead of a credit card. Take your 10% because you're over age 55. And then why don't you just ding the merchant for another 10 or 15%? There's just nothing funnier than watching this guy squirm. What you do is you walk in with a bankroll. So you walk in and you got these $100 bills wrapped up. And let's say that you want to buy a used car. And the price of this used car is $4,000. And you happen to have 40 Benjis in your wad here. Now, you know that this guy bought this car for $2,000 because he's already told you that. He's got it marked at $4,000 and it's going to be keystone. He might have paid $1,000 for it and he's marked it up to $4,000, but you know that he didn't pay over $2,000 for it. Because if he'd have paid $2,500 for it, he'd have it marked at $49.95. So when he's charging you $39.95 for this car, you know he paid $2,000. Now here's what you do. You offer him $2,000 and he'll be insulted and he'll say, well, that's crazy. We can't do that. And he'll say, no, you pay me $3,500. And so you come up to $2,500. See? And at $2,500, he isn't quite as insulted, but he comes down to $3,250. And then pretty soon you say, okay, well, I'll give you $27.50. And he says, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come down another $100 and say, okay, well, let's quit screwing around here. Here's $3,000. And you peel off 30 $100 bills. Now, last week he put out a $2,000 check. He cut a check and he bought this car. And you put those 30 bills on the counter. And he's going to deny it. He's going to tell you no. He'll go back and talk to the boss and say, no, we can't do that. We got to have $3,250. Pick up your 30 $100 bills and say, okay, let me go down to the Ford dealer and see what he'll do. And see if he lets you out of that office. I'll guarantee you he ain't letting you out of that office. He's going to take the $3,000. Now, he might not take under that, but you see, he's making a 50% markup. Now, let me show you what the interest rate is now. Can you imagine that if you paid $2,000 for a car and you sold it for $3,000, what's the interest rate that you made on that car? 50%. 50%. That's a 50% return on your money. If you can make a 50% return on your money in a year, that's better than any mutual fund. That's better than buying real estate. Let's see. What if you could go out and buy a car for $2,000 and sell it for $3,000, make that 50% return? What if you could do that two times a year? My God, that's 100% rate of return. That's 100% profit. You paid out two, and you sold one, and you made $1,000, and then you took $2,000 out of that $3,000, and you bought another car, and you sold it for three. Now you've got $2,000 profit off of the same $2,000 bill. It didn't cost you $4,000, it only cost you $2,000. You used the $2,000 twice because you sold two cars. God, you'd make 100% if you could do that twice a year. What if you could do that four times a year? What if you could do that 12 times a year? What if you could do that every week? And that's what that car dealer is doing. See, you walk into the car dealer over here, and he's got 50 cars out here on his car lot. Does he sell 50 cars a day? No. But if he's selling one car a day and making 50% on it, do you know how much money that guy's making? Man, that guy's scoring big time. $1,000 a day. For about 300 days a year. It's $300,000 a year that he's making. And how much does he have invested in those 50 cars? Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, those car dealers over there, they're using somebody else's money. They're paying interest on those. They went to Westinghouse Flooring and they said, hey, I need you to floor 50 cars over here. And so Westinghouse writes the check, buys the cars. Westinghouse owns the cars, and it's sitting here on this guy's car lot. And he's paying them a percentage of that $1,000 a day. He's probably paying them $100 a day to floor those 49 cars out there. And if that car dealer gets some money ahead pretty soon, he floors 5 cars out there himself and lets them floor 45. And pretty soon the guy owns the whole inventory and he's selling a car a day. Well, if he's selling a car a day, he's turning his whole 50 car inventory 6 times a year, isn't he? My God, boys and girls, if you can turn your inventory 6 times a year and make 50% on it, you're scoring big time. I'm telling you that there isn't any stocks out there, no bonds out there that are paying that kind of return. And now the guy wants to score a little heavier, so he starts carrying his own paper. And so the merchant, the car dealer over here, says, hey, listen, I'll sell you this car. He bought it for two. He sells it to you for four. And he says, I'll finance it for you at 14% interest for 36 months. Pretty soon he starts carrying his own paper. Do you know what that means? Pretty soon he starts making more profit off of the paper that he's selling than off the cars that he's selling. And that's where Ford and General Motors are. They make more profit off of the interest for financing the cars than they make off of making, building, and selling the cars themselves. Boys and girls, the money is in business. The money is in interest. I don't deny that. And the money is being stolen from the consumers. And I'm going to use the word stolen because it violates three basic laws. Leviticus 19 verses 35 and 36. Let me get that straight. That's Leviticus 19 verses 35 and 36. It violates Deuteronomy 25 verses 13 through 16. It violates the usury statutes. It violates the credit statutes, of which there's about 8 of those. Let me just look over here quickly. Next time I'll probably bring up these. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, 8 credit statutes. How many usury statutes? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 statutes in the Bible prohibit usury. That's what it violates. It violates the law of God. But they go to the state, they go to the God of the United States, they go to the God of Missouri, and they get those gods to create the laws that they want to violate the law of God. And then they induce you, through vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear, to come in here and sign this consumer credit contract that has all of these neat clauses in here to screw you and the cosigner. Now, next time, we'll take a look at the continuing cosigner guarantee clause. Continuing. I thought we already had a cosigner guarantee clause. Do you remember that? I showed you last time the cosigner guarantee clause. Wait a minute. We got another one over here, which is called the continuing cosigner guarantee clause. Not only do we have a late fee clause that pays us around 30 to 60% interest off of all of the paper that we've got out there, in addition to the 14% interest, which is really 32% interest that I lied to you about when I baited and switched you into the contract. But now we've got another clause over here called the continuing cosigner guarantee clause that means in plain language, if you finance any other purchase for me in the next 2 years, up to $5,000, the cosigner on this credit purchase guarantees payment on that purchase too. So if you're a cosigner and you cosigned for your boy Bob, and Bob bought a big screen TV, then Bob decides that he wants to go out and buy a used car. And he goes out and buys the used car. Did you know that you're the cosigner on that used car? Bob could go out and buy a used car, a motorcycle, a snowmobile, along with the big screen TV. And did you know that there was a cosigner guarantee clause along with the cosigner guarantee clause that says that you agree to be liable, well, up to $5,000. Or whatever the specified amount in the clause is for whatever else he wants to buy in the future. Did you know that? Now, most people never heard of such a thing as a continuing cosigner guarantee clause, or an acceleration clause, an insecurity clause, a late fee clause, an attorney's fee clause, a cosigner guarantee clause, a confession of judgment clause, a blanket security interest clause, a waiver of state property exemption clause, the right to collect deficiency clause, the waiver of right to privacy clause, the wage assignment clause, and let me tell you this, if there's any other clause that some shyster lawyer has thought up over the last 30 years, you can just about bet that they'll put that in there too. If there's any way to screw you, blue you, or tattoo you, and we can get it through the legislature, we're going to do it to you. So stay tuned. Tomorrow night we'll take a look at some more of these consumer credit contract clauses called Do You Speak Credit, next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, remember our homeschooling page on the website. And then the Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives and can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll be back again tomorrow night. Same time, same station, I hope. So until then, thanks for listening and good night, friends.